Warning, the explicit language in this podcast has been reported to cause occasional incontinence. Will you shit yourself? Depends.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Schindler's Listerine Pocket-Sized Kosher Mouthwash. Did the Holocaust leave a bad taste in your mouth? Did a pedophile rabbi leave a bad taste in your mouth? Did Jewish cuisine leave a bad taste in your mouth? You've got diasporas, pilgrimages, J-dates, pogroms. You can't carry around a big clumsy bottle, so for the Jew on the go, never forget your bottle of Schindler's Listerine. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
When did I say that Jews don't like Catholics?
You were quoted.
No, I'm talking about secular Jews
who run the
Hollywood studios who make anti-Catholic movies.
Hey guys, this is John.
And this is JD.
And we're the hosts of the Rational Talk podcast.
That's right. We wanted to tell you that we have reviewed the evidence.
We've listened to the arguments.
And we've determined that there is only one rational conclusion.
That is, we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
And women, because you know vaginas need love too. And now our favorite podcast, The Scathing Atheist.
It's Thursday.
It's November 14th.
And the date rapist mustache is a weird choice for prostate cancer awareness.
I'm Noah Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright.
And from home of the nation's tallest phallic structure once again, New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, Christians build an enormous airplane to carry a smaller airplane full of Bibles to Korea.
We'll say put 30 seconds on the clock and then do a 53-second bit.
And due to sheer volume, disgraced clergy are no longer considered even slightly ironic.
But first, the diatribe. I know I shouldn't, but sometimes I feel sorry for the theists that argue with me, or any well-read atheist for that matter. Jeremy Behan from Reasonable Doubts offered up a great analogy once. He said, if you want to know what it feels like to be the theist in a religious debate, go find a well-read vegan and argue with them about eating meat. The facts are all on their side. They'll always beat you in the argument. You'll eventually even realize you're wrong, but then you're going to go home and have a burger. Now, I always try to keep that in mind when I reach that point in a debate where my opponent is clearly intentionally misunderstanding me. You know, if you've taken part in any of these debates, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's the point where you actually see the wall come down and then that fearful glaze appears and quickly disappears in their eyes and they mentally erase whatever point you just made and come back with, well, Jesus said, Jesus, Jesus. Now, this reaction leads a lot of atheists to believe that there's just no point in arguing with Christians. You'll never win, right? Well, if by win you mean that you actually get to watch them lose their faith in God and then admit that they were wrong the whole time, yes, you never win. But if you define winning as forcing them into the Jesus said Jesus Jesus phase of the argument, you never lose. Greta Christina gives a great talk where she addresses this perceived futility. She starts off by reminding everybody how pointless it is to debate with religious people, how they never listen, and then she asks for a show of hands from everybody in the audience that was reasoned out of their faith, and at least half the hands in the room go up. Look, when we debate, we're planting seeds, and it doesn't matter that we never get to pick the fruits. The seeds are there, and if there's one thing a religious brain has plenty of, it's fertilizer. I only point this out because it's easy to miss the impact that we're having. You know, those of us with a devangelical bent can look back at our day-to-day success rate and get really depressed, but if we take a long view, it's really encouraging. We've talked plenty on this show about the statistical spike in atheism, and that's obviously the most important metric in this discussion, so clearly we as a community are doing something right. But you don't need pollsters and statisticians to see the difference that we're making. If you want to know how far we've come, just look at the way the debate itself has evolved. 100 years ago, people were still offering up positive examples in their arguments for God. They'd point to things in the world and they say, this, therefore God. But as evolution, genetics, cosmology, and physics have come into clearer focus, those arguments have been relegated to the circle jerks of stupidity. The learned theist abandons those positive examples and shifts to negative examples. Instead of offering a case for God, they piss away their intellectual efforts poking holes in the alternatives. Think about what a massive step backwards that really is. You've gone from trying to prove that your God exists to trying to prove that the guy who says your God doesn't exist is wrong on a topic that is only tangentially related. Instead of the human eye is awesome, therefore God, it's now become the human eye could be less awesome, therefore possibly not un-God. Now, I don't have to point out that if evolution were somehow proved to be incorrect, God doesn't win by default. If somehow it were proved that there's no absolute secular moral standard that prohibits murder, God doesn't somehow get promoted. But the theist act like God's some kind of fucking beauty pageant runner-up or something. Like he's the vice answer that gets to step in and take over if the real answer's ever unable to fulfill its duties. And what's worse is that they know that's incorrect. Sure, there are some ignorant jackasses defending Jesus that don't recognize concepts like false dichotomy, but there are plenty of damn smart theists arguing for God that know good and damn well that knocking down evolution would be like step negative 26 towards proving God, but they still feel compelled to do it. They know that before they can even get to their pathetic proofs, they have to dig all that science and logic out of your brain to make room for Jesus. Hell, I'm sure you're just as sick as I am of hearing these religiots saying atheism is just another religion. But if you set aside how ridiculously wrong that is for a second, you can't help but admire what a huge win this is for us. Their best argument is a false analogy that desperately tries to prove that we suck as bad as they do. We are clearly winning. Every argument counts. Every debate matters. Every chip off that stone adds up. Never lose sight of this important fact. Everybody who has ever given up their faith, everybody who has ever set aside the prison of superstition and embraced reality did so because of one point, one question, one analogy. Sure, other people might have stacked a lot of hay on that camel before, but every time you put another straw in there, it just might be the last one.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is guy who sounds like Randall from Clerks, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to wrangle out the door for everybody?
There I go, and I am a berserker. And speaking of Jersey, congrats to the Red Bank Humanists who put up an atheist billboard that hasn't yet been righteously vandalized.
Give them time, give them time.
And in our lead story tonight, Hasidic rabbis are estimated to body rape about 50% of the young boys they are divinely tasked with mind raping. Victim activist Rabbi Nachem Rosenberg believes, quote, around half of young males in Brooklyn, New York's Hasidic community have been victims of sexual assault perpetrated by their elders, rear end quote.
Fuck.
Indeed, fuck. And Ben Hirsch, director of victim advocacy group Survivors for Justice, suggests the number to be even worse than that.
Dude, I've been saying this for years. Why do you think they make the boys grow their hair out like that? Those are fucking rape handles. Rape handles, bro. They're curly so you can get your fingers in. You know, they got a little hat in case their head hits the headboard.
There's emotional leverage in there, too. So let's admit here that these numbers are only estimates based on anecdotal evidence. So let's say these experts are way off this time. Give them a terrible margin of error. Say 60% or 30 percentage points.
Right, yeah.
That means as many as 80% of young boys were sexually abused, with a floor of 20%. In this extremely generous expert mistake scenario, a minimum of 1 in 5 young boys gets raped. What the fuck?
Well, to be honest, there had to be some kind of rape for get the fifth one free thing going on or something. They're always looking for a good value.
Price is the crux of the argument. When asked about how these numbers stack up against Catholics, I imagine one Hasidic Jewish victim responded, quote, altar boy, I should be so lucky. Over there they roll dice. They only lose 1 in 6. Here they just flip a coin, end quote. This was confirmed by one boldly honest hypothetical rabbi who said, quote, how do we decide who to rape and how? We flip a shekel. Heads and tails should be self-explanatory. Rear end quote.
Well, you got to admit the bell curve keeps skewing the Catholics' way, man. I swear Pope Frank's for nothing gives a few more handjobs to people with boils on the Twitter, and the secular community might just forget all about that institutionalized child rape thing.
What institutionalized child rape?
Yeah, exactly.
Rape? Well, as a reward for the whistleblowing of all the whistleblowing, Rabbi Rosenberg has been shunned by the Hasidic community and attacked with bleach.
With what?
With bleach. That's right. Muslims throw acid. Jews throw strong base.
Fucking what?
Yeah, they really are the Yankees and Red Sox of monotheism, those two. All right. Before we wrap up this wonderful story, I'd like to applaud us for omitting the graphic details of the pedophilia act witnessed in 2005 by Rabbi Rosenberg in Jerusalem's holiest bathhouse. The least atheists call a brothel a brothel.
Yeah, thanks for not bringing that one up.
Did not.
And in turn the other cheek my ass news tonight, Texas Congressman Sam Johnson is livid over an infringement of his freedom to tell other people what to do.
Johnson.
The cataclysmic affront to American values began early last month when the Air Force Academy chose to make the under God portion of its service oath optional.
What's his complaint? Exactly. the earth science section of the Bible puts God at like 30,000 feet, right? I mean, they routinely fly above that altitude. It's reasonable.
Coupling his outrage over the service oath adjustment with the ever-present fury of being named after a cock and bearing a striking resemblance to that pedophile guy in Family Guy, Johnson lashed out with a proposed bill that would require congressional approval before any future changes could be made to the administration of the Uniform Service Oath.
What the fuck? Nobody's suggesting radical, overtly atheist language anywhere. This is,
right.
This is the mildest change ever he's complaining about. All that's happening is we're no longer specifying the thing under which we are during the oath. We're not even saying whether that thing is or isn't. We're just
right.
not addressing the prepositional concept of under here. So we've offensively ignored the ever latent above below duality in the oath. Really? Is that his problem?
Well, I'm guessing his justification won't placate you much. He said that, quote, "There are no atheists in foxholes.
That's original.
We are the land of the free because of the brave," end quote.
Clever, okay.
So setting aside the brazen douchebaggery it takes to act like brave and atheist are mutually exclusive, I think it's important to note that this move was made to accommodate atheists in the military.
Yes.
So if, as Representative Circumcised Salami claims, there are no atheists in the military, what's the fucking problem? No one will omit this from their oath.
Indeed.
Dick.
And in Darwin Awards talent search news, Tennessee pastor and aspiring Indiana Jones villain Andrew Hamblin vows to continue handing deadly serpents to local stupid people despite a raid by wildlife authorities that emptied his Temple of Doom-style snake pit earlier.
Sorry, my inner geek has to point out that in Temple of Doom it was bugs, not snakes. The snakes were in the raiders.
All right, well, Indiana Jones minutia notwithstanding, the atheist community is buzzing as we may have finally discovered a stupid thing caused by dogmatic adherence to wrongness books.
Now, see, I think you might be just letting your personal biases color your appraisal of this situation. After all, who are you to say that giving deadly serpents to inbred Christians is a bad thing?
Yeah, there's some Darwin Award potential.
I mean, we all agree that genocide is a bad thing when it isn't voluntary, but this might be just new ground on the moral landscape we're dealing with here.
The level of stupidity on their part does make it a little tricky, like a Chavo situation. Now, Hamblin was asked, quote, "Using the word snakes three times and a dumb redneck speech pattern, please tell us your opinion on the raid." He responded, quote, "It doesn't bother me that they took the snakes because I can always get more snakes. There can always be more snakes that can be found." Someone yelled, "Not enough dumb redneck speech pattern," at which point Hamblin added, "And that don't deter me. Go eat in the truck." I don't know if he was saying the truck thing to, but he added.
I don't know. I'm disappointed. I was hoping for him to put up more of a fight. I was looking for something like, "You can have my snakes when you pry them from my cold necrotic stumps."
You get the truck. I'll get the snake bite juice. Natural born killers in that thing. Now, when asked for a final quote that betrays his untenable stance, accidentally making the atheist point for us, he said, "No problem." Quote, "What bothers me is that this is not a place of business. This is not a home. Had this been a home or a business, yes, raid it. But this is a church. This is a place of worship." End quote. As if he was done making a point. "We pray here. This is God's stash of heroin and dirty bombs.
Right.
This is God's frenzied pack of herpetic wolverines. What could possibly go wrong? God has safety standards."
And in part two of our weekly denigration of Texas tonight, polyamorous pastor Doug Phillips has stepped down as the head of the Texas-based Vision Forum Ministries after admitting to an extramarital platonic affair.
What?
That's right. When faced with overwhelming evidence that the married father of eight was fucking the babysitter, he admitted to having an inappropriate but not sexual relationship. He said, I shit you not, quote, "While we didn't know each other in a biblical sense, the relationship was nevertheless inappropriately romantic and affectionate."
What a fucking waste. It's the worst clergy excuse since there's nothing about the neighbor's husband in the rules of her son.
Or their kids, yeah.
"I didn't know her biblically because we did it Muslim style. I knew her carnally." There might be some creationism in her uterus, but it's not mine. It's one of God's children. My DNA test was immaculate.
There you go.
"I didn't know her biblically, but I poked my nose between her pages a little, if you know what I'm saying."
Phillips is an outspoken, I just looked at her for the articles. Phillips is an outspoken proponent of male dominion over women and preaches a notoriously sexist, arrogant, and antiquated view of marriage. Needless to say, news of his adultery left his congregants expressing shock that there were multiple women that would fuck him.
Well, the babysitter didn't fuck him, though.
Oh, right.
At most, she gave him a no job. She knew him like a moil knows a bloody, mutilated infant penis. Knew him well.
While Phillips has stepped down as the public face of the for-profit ministry, he still maintains ownership and control in every way that matters. He's canceled all his speaking engagements for the foreseeable future and intends to spend his time, quote, focusing on counting the $3 million a year I rake in telling women to go make me a sandwich, motherfuckers.
And in Felix and Oscars news, the coveted homophobic bigot of the year at the Stonewall Awards goes to Pat Robertson. For being the person who most gratuitously caused hurt and offense to gay people over the last 12 months of the hate season.
In our wildest dream, we will never be as powerful a force for atheism as that frothing fucking lunatic.
Sadly, we will not. Seems to be like Robertson is the Meryl Streep of the Stonewall Awards. It deserves more of a lifetime achievement thing. But apparently they couldn't fit all that queer hate into a single video montage, so they had to settle on highlights from this year only.
And keep in mind that he's a multi-instrumentalist in the bigotry orchestra. Yes. He manages to squeeze award-winning amounts of queer hating in while still hating atheists, Muslims, Jews, actors, blacks, Latinos, Asians, Ukrainians. This guy is a fucking machine.
He's got her versatility, too. Yeah, absolutely. So if you're wondering, by the way, how to gratuitously hurt and offend gays, here's a few examples from a positive role model. Start by comparing transgender people as a group to your castrated horse.
That helps.
Evidently, they hate them. Then maybe suggest that laws against anti-gay discrimination are unconstitutional because Christians could go to jail in that case. Maybe follow this up by pointing out that gays are just straight people who, quote, had the God fucked out of them.
Is that a direct quote?
That's maybe. Or maybe not a direct quote. Then round out your homophobic rant by asking for a, quote, vomit button for disliking gay shit on Facebook.
That really is a quote, yeah, yes.
Absolutely. And then maybe close it out with a line about the secret Gades handshake, dirty needle ring concept.
Right. And that's all from this year. That's not like lifetime highlights or anything. Yeah. That's just this year's homophobia.
New material. He's prolific.
He's like the fucking Woody Allen of gay haters. And in What No Manna news tonight, American pastor Eric Foley became the latest in a long and proud line of Christian missionaries who have gone to great lengths and expense to give Bibles to starving people.
All right, well, I'm about to die of malnutrition, so thanks for this. I'd wipe my ass with the pages, but I don't shit because I don't eat, asshole, so thanks for that. Yeah, I guess it'll be nice to have something unreadable to look at until I die tomorrow. You sure this is going to work, though? I skim the first and last sentence of each chapter, and I'll be able to BS my way into heaven. St. Peter's some sort of shitty middle school English teacher, I guess.
This latest misguided attempt at a high-fiber diet took place along the border of North Korea, where Christian Mission Group and sad attempt at clever name Seoul USA, with the E, so it's Korean.
Oh, it's very clever with the E, yeah.
Anyway, these guys have been surreptitiously dropping balloon loads of Bibles on the malnourished population of one of the world's most oppressive governments for months.
I've got a suggestion for where those bullshit smugglers could put the balloons full of Bibles.
Right.
Clergy experiment with religion via suppository all the time, right? It doesn't usually get them into too much trouble.
When asked why they chose to sneak Bibles into the country instead of useful stuff like food, medicine, or anything other than a Bible, Reverend Foley chewed on his cell phone or barked or something, because you'd have to be a drooling fucking retard not to realize what an insultingly stupid waste of resources this is.
And from
fucking
the
Bibles.
And from the expansive Christians forcing captive kids to do stuff file, school bus driver, Minnesota pastor, and asshole with Roman numerals after his name, George Nathaniel III, was fired from his more gainful employment for refusing to stop evangelizing to public school children stuck in his shitty prayer bus.
It sucks. It's got to make it damn hard to maintain that back-and-forth jostling bus stiffy.
Well, for some, not for others. Anyway, after complaints of unsolicited religious advances, he was assigned to a different group of children, much like a disgraced priest shuffled to a different church. Wonderful. Finally, after failing to heed repeated warnings to stop violating district policy and also the First Amendment, III was terminated. The District of Burnsville will have to scramble to quickly find someone qualified to silently drive a bus.
Okay, all right. Question one. The wheels on the bus go round and what?
Blank.
Okay, very good. Question two. It is acceptable to theologically brain rape the kids, A, occasionally, or B, never.
Just the two choices.
Apparently, just, yeah.
So, this week's set of headlines seems to have established a theme of mental rape a lot more than usual, anyway. So I guess I'll roll with it. Put in the worst possible words, kids do need to be brain raped to some extent. You gotta learn. But let's keep it to a minimum. You know, that's all I'm saying. Just maybe just true things, if we're making a rule about minimizing the brain rape. Stick to the true things being
and
raped.
And finally tonight, in part three of our weekly denigration of Texas, Pastor Philip Hines of the Cavalry Lutheran Church in Fort Worth has learned that raping people's brains is a lot like raping their assholes. It helps if they're drunk. This inspiration led him to start an outreach program called Church in a Pub.
So Fort Worth Walmart is installing a pub? Nice. Texans can finally get drunk, buy guns, hate queers, and love Jesus. All under one roof. Wonderful. It used to be two roofs.
Two roofs, yeah. Firmly supplanting karaoke is the most annoying thing that now takes place in a bar. The unconventional location for this ministry helps spread the word of Jesus to the segment of society most likely to be dealing with perpetually damaged brain cells, while simultaneously sparing the congregation the expense of rent. So, at the risk of overplaying this bit, 30 seconds on the clock.
All right. Blah, blah, blah.
Jesus-themed booze. Go.
Nice. Okay. Killed by Jews booze. All right. Just before we move on, I got to explain something here. The reason we go after Jews so much is primarily because Jew is a single syllable that just works easily into puns. It just
right.
Does.
Yes,
it's nothing
does.
Personal, except when it is. Anyway, Holy Spirits. Game on. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that didn't count over against the 30 seconds.
All right. Yeah, starting now. Holy Spirits. Jesus of Nazarethanol.
1 Samuel Adams.
Nice. Call back to our most recent babble.
Yes, there
How about some other beers? Glenn Beck's? No. Fuck him. We're not going to include him in the show. I already did. Shit. King Jameson.
Burning Bush.
Nice. All right, going to move over to some cognac. Remy Martin Luther.
Nice.
Some other liquor stuff. Origin and Tonic.
I like it. All right, how about Absolution Vodka?
Nice. Okay. He probably didn't like rusty nails. All right, screwdriver up against the cross with a twist.
Sounds delicious.
The garnish that broke the Savior's back. Hands, wrists.
And on that long list of reasons to take a quick break from recording, we're going to wrap up the headlines. Heath, thanks as always for your biting wit and insight.
Offensive exclamation.
And when we come back, we'll be drunker. Come on in, guys.
What's up, Mark?
Nothing much. Appreciate you coming out. Where's John? He had a date. A date?
Yeah, he said he would just copy off of our notes later.
Really? I mean, we're transcribing the life of God's only begotten son here. It's pretty important that he, you know, show up. Hey, you got any beers? No, Matthew, this is serious stuff. I figured we'd all stay sober for it.
I figured we'd stay sober.
All right, so go ahead and grab a quill and some parchment there. I figured we could just jot down a few notes before we got started.
What notes? We were all there. Can't we just tell the story the way we saw it?
Sure. Look, that's the plan, but this is possibly the most important story ever recorded. It's vital that we present a unified account of all the events, you know, for posterity.
Sure, why not?
All right, so let's start with Jesus' birth. Jesus was born in Nazareth.
Galilee.
Bethlehem.
What?
Galilee.
Bethlehem.
No, Nazareth.
No, Galilee.
No, Bethlehem.
Guys, the dude's last name is of Nazareth. Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah, but he moved to Nazareth later. He was born in Bethlehem.
In a manger.
What?
Yeah, because of the census.
What census?
Oh, and his mom was a virgin.
Nice.
Guys, that doesn't even make any sense. Look, we need to take this seriously.
Oh, and check this out. How about 3 wise men showed up when he was born and crowned him the king of earth while he was still a baby?
I don't know about all that stuff, but I like the virgin birth bit.
But that didn't happen. Guys, I think it's important that we don't exaggerate.
Who's exaggerating? If he hadn't been crowned king, how else would he have escaped King Herod's order to execute all the children under 2 years of age? The what?
And he had laser vision.
No laser vision.
Oh, come on.
Look, I'm writing down Nazareth. I'm writing it down now. Jesus was born in Nazareth. Fine. I'm writing down that he was born in Bethlehem to a virgin during a Roman census under the threat of Herod's infanticidal dictum.
And I'm giving him laser vision.
No laser vision.
No beer, no laser vision. You suck, Mark.
You know what? Let's just put the birth stuff on the back burner for a minute. We can hash all that out. But this story's really more about his death than his birth anyway, right?
Couldn't agree more.
All right, so we do all agree that he was crucified, right?
Of course.
Okay. So they stick him on the cross, he cries out for God, and then he dies.
Right.
Okay, I think it would be better if, and just hear me out on this one, but I think it would be better if he forgave his killers. And then he reassured the good thief and then, like, offered himself up to God. That would be way cooler.
Yeah, maybe that's cooler, but that's not how it happened.
Well, maybe that's how I remember it.
Guys, this is getting out of hand here. Jesus gets crucified, he cries out to God, he dies, they stick him in the tomb.
Right, then his mom and his lady friend went back to the tomb.
And Joanna.
Anyway, whoever it was, they get there and they find...
two men in
dazzling apparel. The angel of the Lord with a visage like lightning.
See, this is what I'm talking about. It was a dude in a white robe. It ends with them finding the empty tomb and a dude in a white robe. The end. Roll credits.
Well, what about when he came back to life?
When he what?
Yeah, he appeared in a room in Jerusalem.
A mountain in Galilee, you mean?
To his disciples.
And everybody else.
And he reassured everybody that he would come again.
And he had an army of zombies.
Guys, this just happened. If you write that he had an army of zombies and laser vision, everybody's gonna know you're full of shit.
Okay, fine, no laser vision.
But we're keeping the zombies.
We're not keeping the zombies.
In my gospel, there's gonna be zombies.
What do you mean, your gospel? There's just going to be one gospel, the life of Jesus.
I thought we would each write our own.
Yeah, that sounds way better.
Okay, fine, but if we do that, don't we at least have to get the story right? I mean, how can we each throw out a gospel that tells a different story about this guy? Who the fuck would believe that?
You'd be surprised.
Before we lick the plate tonight, I wanted to thank everybody who checked out our Cafe Press site at cafepress.com/scathingatheist and picked up some of that fine logoed merchandise we've got over there. I'm sure a lot of little faces are going to be really happy when they unwrap that Scathing Atheist logo beer stein on Christmas morning. I also wanted to let everyone know who hasn't checked out the site that we do have a special on Scathing Atheist Christmas tree ornaments. So if you have one of those trees at the local mall that lets people put up their own ornaments or anything, it's $6.66 well spent. Also a great one to sneak onto Grandma's tree to get an awkward conversation started. Also need to thank John and JD from the Rational Talk podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. Their podcast is a newer one, but it's fun, it's raunchy, and it's got a lot of promise. Definitely one worth checking out. The name makes it kind of hard to Google, so be sure to check the show notes on this week's episode for a link, or check them out at therationaltalk.com. Also need to thank Lucinda, as always, for molding me into the human being that I am today through boundless reserves of patience and tolerance. Oh, and also for providing the explicit warning this week and for that thing that she does with her tongue, and she knows exactly what I'm talking about. I also need to thank Heath for that thing he does with his tongue, and for all you know, I'm referring to all the talking and being funny he does on this show every week. And while we're thanking people, I also want to thank Tony Romo and Dez Bryant for sucking balls last week against the Saints, leading to an improbable and narrow victory for my fantasy football team over Bill and Susie over at Barroom Atheist, thus ending a 3-game slide and putting me back into third place as we approach the postseason. But most of all, I need to thank this week's distressingly short list of the world's best people, Robert and Thomas. Robert, whose penis is rivaled in size and power only by the high water mark of the Mongolian Empire, and Thomas, whose evolutionary perfection would make his genetic code an international bestseller. These two pillars of humanity have improved the lives of countless rational beings across the Virgo cluster this week by giving us money. Our donation system is, of course, highly selective in who it will allow to give us money, but if you think you share the pansophical cunning of Robert and Thomas, please feel free to find out by clicking the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And remember, the more money it allows you to give, the better of a human being you are. Oh, one other quick note. Up till now, I've done a song on every 10th episode. I've got one written for episode 40, but with the Holy Babel segment and the poem and everything, we're not going to have room for it next week, so you'll have to wait an extra week to hear me singing about priests raping children. That's all the blasphemy we have for you tonight. Remember, people who give us a 5-star review on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on YouTube, follow the blog, and like us on Facebook, get eternal oral sex after they die, and if you don't believe me, I can write it down in a book and then quote that book to prove it.
If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. You think we got enough Holocaust jokes in there for Dan?
We got to be the only show that gets complaints about too few Holocaust jokes. It's unique.